Well, the key really is to get a good result at these elections, to send a very clear message, not just to the government, but to Parliament as well, that the people want Brexit. You know, we missed the 29th of March, we missed the 12th of April, we got an extension to the 31st October, doesn't look like they're achieving anything. All the proposals from Theresa May, indeed the withdrawal agreement, basically remain by another name, in fact remain without any get-out clause, and the proposals from Labour are also another shape of Remain. So we want to send a very clear message to our own Parliament that they must get on with Brexit.
But this isn't a referendum. This is actually taking seats in a democratic body. What are you actually going to get done there? Well, this isn't just about a message.
Well, I will unashamedly stand for what is good for Britain. As Jacob Rees-Mogg said, actually, you know, the European Union hasn't played entirely fairly with us during these negotiations. And once we get there, we will make our
voices... Sorry, what do you mean by that? Because they're a negotiation. What do you mean by unfairly?
Yeah, well, I think that perhaps my choice of words is driven by my natural desire to put the United Kingdom first. But it seems to me that they've negotiated us into a cocked hat. So, for example, I don't think that the... Irish border issue is a genuine issue. I think they've used that as an axe to grind to get what they want on a broader basis. I don't think we should ever have agreed giving them £39 billion before we actually got what we wanted, which was a free trade agreement. And I don't think that we should have conceded things like, for example, fishing rights in the political declaration. They have the right to come and fish in our waters post-Brexit.
A brief fact check added after the interview. The political declaration states that the UK and EU will cooperate and establish a new agreement on fishing after Brexit. Nothing concrete is decided or given away. Okay, let's deal with the withdrawal agreement and Brexit in a moment, because there's actually a lot to unpack here. But concentrating just on the European Parliament then, if you're there, you quote Jacob Rees-Mogg. He's talked about politicians in the European Parliament using it effectively to antagonise our neighbours, to essentially disrupt things.
Well,
is that your plan?
And I'm with him on that. I think if we go there, we stand unashamedly for what's in the British national interest and to obstruct them.
You're talking about obstructing a democratic body. You're a businessman. Is this a good way of getting a good deal for the UK
it
to act childishly on the world stage?
Just pick you up on one thing, Nick. It's not a democratic body. The European Parliament has no ability to initiate legislation or indeed to block it. It's the commissioners who propose legislation. It's really, with the exception of one or two decisions that it can make, it's really a talking shop. So the extent of disruption we can cause is limited, but we want our voices heard. But I'm not...
So the point is, I mean, again, you say that this is not a seat that you will take to actually do anything positive in terms of legislation. Fine.
Well, you can't.
In which case,
the point. You can't do anything positive as a European Member of Parliament.
In which case, then, what will we be paying you for?
Well, the payment is whatever the European Union pays out. But what I'm hoping is that we can light a fire under our own Parliament to get us out of Europe, get us out of the European Union.
I mean, again, I'm going back to this point. You're essentially using this as a second referendum, correct? That you want this to be a message that Brexit and the Brexit Party's particular strand of Brexit is what's being supported here.
I wouldn't call it a second referendum. It is just sending a very strong signal to Parliament that they must get on and give effect to the democratic decision made by this country in 2016.
Okay, then. Apart from leaving the European Union, are there any policies that the Brexit Party is bringing to the bear?
Well,
because we haven't seen a manifesto.
No, you know, bear in mind the party's only about 6 weeks old. Our principal and main policy is that we must now leave the European Union on WTO terms.
All right, unpack that. Look, this is a business programme. We've talked on this before.
Yeah.
Explain WTO terms to me.
Well, WTO terms, WTO is World Trade Organization, and their terms, there are terms that the WTO lay down for global trade. There are various guidelines on tariffs that should be set for various goods. You can deviate from those tariffs as long as you deviate universally and you don't favour one nation over another. You can get certain exemptions to that, subject to the approval of the WTO. But the basic point is that we want to leave the European Union. And we haven't been able to agree a deal that makes sense for the United Kingdom. And so we must leave on WTO terms.
WTO terms are the default, the worst possible trading relationship you can have with another country, the most favoured nation being pretty much the only element of that. Basically having the highest level of tariffs that are shared by everyone across the board outside of customs unions and things like the single market.
Well, I disagree that WTO rules are the worst possible way to trade, firstly. I mean, you could step outside the WTO and not be part of it.
And name a country that does.
I can't name one offhand, but theoretically that's what you could do. But I want to take issue on a couple of things with you, Nick, if I may. Only 10% of our GDP, roughly, depends on trade with the European Union. It's not a significant part of our GDP. Everyone makes out as if it's an absolute critical component of our existence on an economic front.
One in ten pounds of our GDP is not insignificant.
Can I finish, Nick? 10%. Everyone makes out as if it would be Armageddon if we get a WTO exit. At worst, what it would mean at current levels of trade is that we would be levying on them 13 billion euros worth of tariffs, and they would levy on us 5 billion euros worth of tariffs. Actually, the tariffs involved are small by comparison to the trade that we have with the rest of the world, and indeed are easy for this government and this country to circumnavigate.
But it's not about tariffs, is it? Tariffs are a minor part of world trade now. This is about regulations on safety and on, you know, standards.
Sure, but there's nothing to suggest that the British government wouldn't adhere to the highest level of regulations outside the European Union. We're a leader in so many fields. This notion that we've got to be wed to the European Union in order to ensure that we have the right regulations in our own country, it's just a fundamentally flawed one.
We're not talking about being wed, though. We're talking about consistency. When I buy something from Poland, I know that it is being built to the same standards as that from France, Germany or the UK. I know this because we've all agreed to the same standards, but also, more crucially, they're being overseen by regulators that are themselves then accountable to, ultimately, the European Court of Justice.
Well, we can oversee our own regulations. We can oversee the quality of our own product.
Let's move on just for example, to the Irish border that you wanted to talk about. You said earlier in this interview that you feel that this is something of a confected issue.
It is, yeah, absolutely. The United Kingdom has repeatedly declared it would not close the border. And Michel Barnier, earlier this year, I think it was January or February, I can't remember exactly in which month, when no deal began to look like a possibility, declared also that the European Union would never close the border. So the border won't close. And that's it. There's no issue.
You must realise that there are borders between other countries that don't have the same kind of close ties that EU nations have. For example, take Norway, which is outside of the single market, and Sweden. That still has a border.
Yeah.
Why do you think that Northern Ireland and Ireland will be different?
Well, because we have a Good Friday Agreement, pursuant to which we've undertaken to keep the border open. The Southern Irish want it open. We want it open for the Good Friday Agreement, and we will adhere to that undertaking.
Where will goods be checked? We've had business leaders from Northern Ireland on this programme saying that this is an issue, and also that smuggling is an issue, one that they expect to be exacerbated by Brexit.
Let's just get this into context. The Good Friday Agreement is much more important than ensuring that you've collected the appropriate amount of tariffs on goods coming across from Southern Ireland into Northern Ireland and back again. So again, you know, it's an economic argument that is being used to try and hijack the constitutional argument. There may be some customs leakage. There probably will be some customs leakage across that border. What I put to you, Nick, is so what?
What if, for example, the goods being smuggled are poisonous? What if the milk that we bring in becomes toxic because the safety standards aren't being adhered to? So these are the things which are checked at borders.
Are you suggesting, having said earlier to me in this interview, that it's the regulatory framework of the European Union that's attractive, that goods coming in from the European Union to the United Kingdom could be defective?
I absolutely am saying that, because we'd be a cheap place to offload that. If you know that your goods aren't going to be checked going from one route, you can understand that perhaps you would not adhere to the regulatory framework that is overseen elsewhere. And also, we know that regulatory frameworks fall. The point I was making earlier was that we also have systems in place to actually check and make sure that these things are taking place and are as safe as we want. We know if food coming in and around the EU, like anywhere else on Earth, is not perfect.
Okay, so the regulatory framework in the European Union is not great, is what you're saying.
Finally, Mr. Beeb, we're sending you potentially to the European Parliament. Now, you have previously said that the volatility of Brexit is something which has benefited you and your company. It's something that allows you to make cheaper property deals than you might otherwise have been able to do. There is also a potential that a no-deal Brexit would also have that effect. For voters who will not benefit in that way, why should they send you to the European Parliament to potentially push through those kind of policies?
Well, just let me be clear on the point you just made. First of all, as I've said and I hold to be true, I don't think leaving the European Union will have a material adverse effect on the economy of the United Kingdom. I've said that repeatedly. If, however, there are market participants who do get nervous and unnecessarily offload property, then we will buy that property. After the vote in 2016, a number of open-ended funds had to close their doors because there was a run on those funds and they had to sell property. We bought property, but we bought property not because we were taking advantage of anything. We bought property because we believed in the United Kingdom and we believed that these people who were selling property were silly to be doing it. And if that happens again, I would say to these people, and I'm saying it now, if we no-deal Brexit, do not sell your property. Hold on to it. And if there are people who are irrationally selling property at below value, then I would advocate anyone who's got cash to buy those properties because the economy of the United Kingdom will be secure.